Hey folks, and welcome back to the Firefighters Podcast. Today on the podcast, I welcome two members of the incredible Antarctic Fire Angels team. Georgina Gilbert and Rebecca Rowe, together with the rest of the team, attempting an incredible feat, 1,900 kilometer trek. They are looking to take away and tackle the stigma of women's mental health, and they will share some incredible personal stories from professional sport to military background to mindset to how to be cantankerous, how that selfish approach can sometimes lead to some incredible things when you're able to put your head above the parapet, get out there and do something incredible for a wonderful cause. Today's episode is sponsored once again by the wonderful William Wood Watches. Head over to williamwoodwatches.com. These are made from 100% recycled fire service equipment, once forgotten, now reborn. Each one of their watches contains a piece of history. William Wood was the name of the owner's late grandfather, and he served in the British Fire Service for over 25 years, winning commendations for his acts of bravery. The William Wood logo represents the side profile of the 1920s British firefighter helmet in dedication to his grandfather and the years of courage he showed in the service. So head over to williamwoodwatches.com, check them out, get yours right now, do it now, stop the podcast, go do it now. I know you're going to enjoy this today. There's so many references, and all of the details for this will be in the show notes of the podcast. You can get out there, you can donate to this incredible cause, and I hope you enjoy it. Buckle up for safety, and I will see you on the other side. George and Bex, welcome to the Firefighters Podcast. How are we doing?
Very well, thank you.
All good, thank you.
I first heard about you guys because I sort of stay in contact with Alex Johnson and a couple of other previous guests like Nicola Hobbs and Beck Meachin, and what you lot are doing in terms of, first and foremost, just an incredible physical challenge, but also some of the stigmas that you're trying to break through the demonstration of this heroic challenge is pretty inspiring stuff. So for one way or another, I seem to have navigated my way to this wonderful conversation. I'm hoping you're going to be able to enlighten us with firstly, I mean, George, what is Antarctic Fire Angels and why did it start?
So we're a team of five firefighters, two from South Wales and three from London Fire Brigade. And the concept came together from a talk that we did in Women in the Fire Service. It was a couple of years ago now in June. And there was one of the ice maidens there, Sophie Montague. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
I'm constantly getting names wrong, so don't worry. I keep getting emails from people going, you know, you've said the last name wrong. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, sorry, yeah. But you know what I mean.
Well, we've known her for quite some time now, and I've never asked. So it's one of those embarrassing moments. Like, if I ask now, it means, like, you know, other things. Anyway.
awkward. The moment's
gone. Awkward. Yeah, the moment's gone. Yeah. And anyway, so she's one of the ice maidens, and she was there doing a talk. And she had some amazing visuals, and the way that she was talking and the way that she put it across was so inspiring. I mean, it's like from start to finish, there were goosebumps. So not because she was talking about a cold environment. It was just so inspiring. And it was really refreshing to hear somebody talk like that about, basically showing women what women can do. And we're sick of the narrative.
What's an ice maiden? What's an ice maiden?
Oh, sorry.
I don't want to jump past that.
Yes.
Some people might hear that and they might think that's like a bit of an offensive term. Because I'm sure like partners at times may have been referred to as a bit icy or a bit cold. But actually, it's a compliment. So what is an ice maiden?
Okay. So the Ice Maidens were a team of women from the British Army.
Okay.
Of the regular British Army and reservists as well. So they put a team together quite a few years ago now. And they basically did a traverse across Antarctica as well. And that's what inspired us. So an Ice Maiden is actually somebody serving in the British Army and not somebody that's a little bit icy.
That's a bit cold and maybe a little bit of that character. Yeah. No, but I love sort of like that because I get Viking terms and all sorts of old, like some people call me a savage sometimes. I see some of the training and getting in ice baths and stuff and they're like, oh, dude, you're a savage. And I think that's a compliment, but I know for some people, especially in today's world, bless them, we sometimes get caught up on that. But anyway, she gave a really inspiring talk at the what is Women in the Fire? I mean, it sounds obvious. And I think we referred to a couple of podcasts, but that's a really powerful organisation in itself. So had you all already been a member of this and they have speakers every year, I'm guessing?
Yeah, they do. They it's been going for years, and it started off as networking women in the fire service. I've been in like 21 years.
Okay.
And so it started years and years and years ago, and it was quite a small network of albeit quite powerful women, you know, in the service already, quite high ranking officers and things, and sort of a splashing of you know, firefighters and things. But it's really, really developed over the last number of years, and it's only in the last sort of the 10 years or so, it's really taken hold. Obviously, the demographic of the fire service is changing, so more and more women are joining. And I mean, when we went, the last time it went, it went ahead, obviously, COVID and stuff. There were hundreds of women there.
Really?
You know, and it's not a closed door event, you know, it's men and women, you know, so it's not certainly not a closed door.
One of our previous guests, Steph Douglas, he's did a lot of work supporting his partner originally, but then I think he still contributes tremendously anyway, because I'm sort of that kind of person as well, where if I go to somewhere and it's surrounded with like-minded people and I feel great when I'm there, I'll keep going. I'm not overly bothered too much about what it's built around, if you know what I mean. I like to have an alignment with the passion, but I see this with certain religions and also certain thought processes. But I like going to like personal development workshops, just because it's a bunch of people trying to make themselves better. And I kind of hear that when you're talking about the fire, women in the fire service. It is obviously built around women, but it's more personal development, supporting each other by the sounds of it.
It's like-minded people, and that they want to see their fire service heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, there's that you can't have a balanced opinion or decision making if not everybody's invited to the table.
Love
and
it.
That's what it's all about. You know, everybody needs to be invited to make those decisions. But everybody needs to know that there's an open invite as well. So, and not to think, you know, oh, it's not for me, or you know, it's I don't have time for it and anything. You know, it's. And as women in the fire service, we're all visible role models, and that's one of my things. Yeah, be a visible role model.
Do you,
you know?
Think that name is? And I apologise, I know I've taken you off on a tangent. I'm terrible at this, but the words sort of.
He loves a tangent.
I love a tangent, mate. The whole role model thing. Some people struggle with that, because I've heard many of our sort of current and past guests have been referred to as role models before, and some people feel like that's a massive pressure. Like, oh, you're a real role model of mine, and people are like, oh God, I feel, because. Even though, no matter what, and I'm sure you girls and guys feel the same way now, even though you've achieved what you've achieved and you're going for this incredible thing, you've got a lot of attention and all this sort of stuff, you are a role model. Does that bring a lot of pressure? Because I know we're going to get onto mental health in a little bit, and I don't want to jump around too much and cause you to try and answer seven questions at once, but role model's a big term. Does that bring any weight with it?
There is some responsibility that comes with it, I think.
Yeah.
Because you know, as a role model, basically people are watching what you're up to, aren't they, basically? And, you know, following you, and, you know, maybe some people aspiring to kind of do what you're doing, or, you know, so there's definitely a responsibility that comes with it. But, and I suppose with that, there is some added pressure, but I don't know. Firstly, I don't feel it massively. I just feel like I need to make sure that I'm doing good things and the right things, maybe.
I mean, yours is a perfect example of it, Bex, because I've got it written down as I was doing some research for our chat, but you have competed at a very high level in a couple of different sports. So you must have had that conversation at some point in time where they were like, oh, Bex, you need to think about the example you're setting. You know, you're a professional athlete. Not that like you were doing something wrong, but you know, you operated in a rugby environment at one point, and I've done that in the past in different sports where, you know, you get a bit leery after the game, or you really like to enjoy yourself, and people go, hey, you know, you got caught and it got taken out of context. You were doing something, or you were having a laugh. Have you had that conversation before? Because you definitely were and still are a role model in different areas. There was the rowing, there was the rugby. How has that been a factor for yourself?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, you know, certainly when I was playing rugby, we had people in to talk to us about that very thing. So you guys are now our role models. You're in the public eye. You know, you need to you know, take just a little bit more responsibility and think about, you know, what you're doing and when you're out, just, you know, just in general life, basically, because, you know, you might do something and someone, especially nowadays with the social media phones and cameras, you know, you might not realise, but someone might be filming you, and that could end up, you know, on social media and have a huge effect on your career, the team's career, you know, the actual sport itself. And I think especially, you know, with women's rugby, you know, there's still there still is stigma around that. So, you know, I think it's almost...
That's what I mean. And was it like, oh, we've fought so hard to get to where we are, to get on the same stage, to get in these national competitions. Look, don't mess it. Don't mess it up for us. Don't do something stupid and ruin it for everybody else. Was that ever received with like a little bit of anger? Like, well, why should we be any different than the guys or the girls or this country or that country? Why are we being expected to be perfect? Because nobody is, let's be honest. I'm certainly not.
Yeah. No, I certainly aren't.
I constantly say stupid things.
I'm not either. I suppose you could think, you know, from a gender equality type of thing, like, well, what, you know, I always felt like as the female, the women's team, we have to probably be squeaky clean, probably more, you know, the men definitely got away with a lot more than we did. But unfortunately, you know, women's rugby isn't as high profile as men's rugby, and we obviously want it to be. So we have to, you know, jump through these hoops to try and raise the bar for it. So I think we all, you know, we all knew that that's what we had to do, and everyone bought into that, I think. And you know, if there was people that weren't walking that line, then I think they'd be pulled back into line, basically, you know, by the team in general, because we all, you know, we all had an agenda to try and push the sport, you know, up through the ranks and you know,
and you
make
kind
it
of have to get that, do you know what I mean? You have to be in that mindset. I was I played for Team GB in a couple of sports, and we had a saying, I won't repeat the entire saying, but basically it was FIFO, which is fit in or F off, was the end of the bit we say. And one of those, it was like, yeah, I know, guys, you've got great skill sets, this, that, and the other, but you need to get it. You need to realize you stand for more than just yourself now, more than just the team. There's people that admire you. And on that, I mean, Bex, I want to come back. Oh, sorry, George, I want to come back because I realize we've gone so far off on a tangent. We were seeing how Antarctic Fire Rangers got started. So you'd seen our proverbial Ice Maiden give an incredibly inspiring speech. And then, George, what happened?
Yeah. and then saw Nikita, who's our team leader.
Yes.
Later on that evening. And I just sort of waltzed up to her, and we both kind of had this acknowledging look of did you listen to that talk? and Sophie wasn't too far away from us, and you could feel like somebody looking at you.
Glance over.
And then we just looked at each other and went, look, you know, should we look at doing something that's like this?
That sounds like a bit of a lie, George. Anything? Should we give that a crack? That sounds all right.
Yeah. Should we have a bash at that or something similar? So we went waltzing over to Sophie, who was sat next to Danny Cotton at the time, who's the previous chief fire officer of London, and we just looked at them both and went, we want to do this, and the two of them went, yeah, we'll support you in anything in what we can.
And then at that point,
it was definitely, because that's like that was the thumbs up to say, yeah, go ahead. Do you know what I mean? Regardless of what any of our partners were going to say when we got home.
Starts like the social accountability as well, doesn't it? I always say to people, you know, when you set a big goal, or even if you set out something, start telling people, not in like a, oh God, look at me, but put yourself out there. So then you expect somebody to go, hey, George, how are you getting on with the thing? And you'll go, damn, you'll either go, damn, I've done nothing. Or you'll be like, we're like 3 months into prep and we're smashing it. But it starts to keep you accountable, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, Nikita and I then sort of split up for the weekend, because she was busy with her USAR workshops, and I was busy with my colleagues as well and stuff for the weekend.
Yeah.
And then I messaged her about 4 days later and said, look, is this a thing? And what should we do? And she messaged back really quickly and said, yeah, absolutely, let's go for it. Nice. And then we met up in London and tried to smash out some real basic stuff, you know, like teammates and you know, what we're going to call ourselves, which was like a minefield.
Oh, God, I'll tell you what, the names for things. I have this with when I do corporate business stuff, people are like, when did you get the right name? When did you get the right name? I said, you don't, you do and you don't. It really is mostly irrelevant. We can spend so long, and people do, name of a competition, name of a thing. And that, in the name of this podcast, I just went, I'm just a firefighter. I just call it a firefighter's podcast. But later on, people go, oh, it was such a good name. Or like Nike or anything. Oh, it's such a good name. But anyway, see, it's been ages deciding them. Who were some of your top runners. It must have been hard to find those, and I'm going to say freaks as a compliment because I'm often referred to as that. We go, who have we got who's a bit of a savage, who's a bit of a freak, who's up for this sort of gnarly stuff? Because this is, with all due respect, it's not like, oh, should we just run a marathon, which is hard and impressive in itself, and I acknowledge anybody that does it, but this is some crazy stuff. When we get onto what the task is, how did you find that list? Did you already have a list of people?
I had a little bit of a list in my head, and but again, you know, you're never sure how it's going to be received. So, you know, I had basically, I came back to the brigade, and of course we basically had to cherry pick people because we couldn't do it like the army did, because we didn't have the money to go and do selection courses and things like that. And of course, because it was the brainchild of myself and Nikita, we were like, well, what if we do a selection course and neither of us pass it? It's like, oh dear.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, so unknowing us, we would have set something like ridiculously hard, you know, and watched everybody else go through it, and then sort of realised, oh, not sure.
Also,
I can do that
myself. It's a very strange challenge, and I say that in a good way, because of the sheer endurance. And I don't just mean the endurance of when you start doing it, I mean the endurance of preparation for it. It's a bit like if you were choosing the team for an Olympics, it'd be like, oh, do you fancy this? Right, it's not for 4 years, and you're going to have to keep nailing it till then. This is the sort of thing that, yes, there's a goal, but it's not just show up in 2 weeks. You lot have had a lot of, I know we're going to get into the training, so it's picking that. You must have known that even when you were approaching people, that you may say yes now, but this is a long way off. So there's so many factors there. And we're not even talking about COVID yet, crikey.
Yeah, I think for me, it was basically cornering them in a room on their own. And
how all the best plans start.
Yeah,
I've got an opportunity for you. Got an opportunity.
Yeah. So you can't say no. I mean, I the two people that I chose, obviously we dropped from 6 to 5. So the two people I chose, they were chosen for quite specific skill sets. So I knew we're all about mental health. So I knew Becky because I've been serving with her for quite some time. And she doesn't mind anybody saying that she does suffer from some mental health, poor mental health from time to time. So she was for that. And also the fact that she's a mother, a working mother, and very, very busy. And that's everything that we're going to stand for as well. You know, even though you're a parent,
100%,
you know, these things don't stop you from doing something amazing. And of course we have Alison as well. Or Alison was just down to her sheer endurance. The fact that she was whole-time firefighter, a female firefighter in Wales back in, I don't know when, actually. I don't know when she joined.
I don't know either.
Yeah, early 90s. So she's going to listen to this now and kill me, probably. She won't mind me saying, she's a grandmother of 7. So it puts her into a different category again well. So she's the sage of the group. And of course, she's management. So, you know, so we're tackling with different shift patterns and, you know, different ways of working. So we needed, you know, quite a good cross-section of people that could work well together. So it wasn't, for me, it wasn't necessarily about, you know, who's the fittest and who's the strongest or anything. It was more about bringing just different skill sets of mind management then.
So did you plan this down on, you know, did you throw it onto a whiteboard and go, look, we're going to need a sort of a strategist, maybe a bit of a first aid style person, a definite leader, a definite like me, some monkey with some muscle who can drag the sled. I don't know, just something like that. You know, did you have that in your mind? Because I've been, you know, we've done like Belbin exercises and Myers-Briggs stuff before, where you're like, we need to balance the team. Because you're right, you get a bunch of savages together, we'll be super excited till one of us rips the other one's head off, and we've only made it 2 kilometers. So there was no point really.
Yeah. Well, this way, we needed a mix of youth and enthusiasm and age and treachery. They normally go together. So
I tell you what, that's a soundbite right there. I love that. They're 4 wonderful characters. Yeah, I think with a challenge like this as well, like you say, it's optimism, but you almost need to be ignorant enough to start it and then stubborn enough to keep going. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you know, even no matter how much you try and conceptualize it, the challenge you lot are trying to undertake is fairly unfathomable just in its sheer vastness to most people. Until you're really in it, you can comprehend it, train. But I think, you know, when you lot are there, even then it will be like, we've just got to be stubborn enough and resourceful enough to do this now, because I don't think anybody's going to comprehend how big a challenge this is.
Yeah, I think we're going to have days of, you know, what the hell are we thinking?
Yeah.
I think.
Oh shit!
But I'll probably be shouting at Nikita and George, because obviously it would have been their idea.
Yeah.
So.
But again, everyone's gone through a lot of. Again, we spoke a little bit about mental challenges there and setbacks and overcoming that sort of stuff. But Bex, how have you sort of brought up, and maybe you haven't, I'm not sure, but I'd be interested to hear. A lot of your background comes from some really, really great structured physical disciplines. Have you took on that role in essence of a coaching approach, or do you feel as though you've been, I don't know, not labeled as that, but you've got some, you know, let's talk a little bit first about your background, because we've alluded to it. Tell us a little bit where you come from a sporting background, because you've had the massive setback with an injury as well.
So sport has been my life, really. It's probably shaped really who I am as well. And I got involved in, I was actually a swimmer back in my sort of early teenagers and when I went to university. So I swam for years and years, you know, through school, had to do the early morning training, after school training.
Swimming is grueling. That was really grueling, yeah, in terms of time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it was basically my life and my poor parents' life as well, because they have to drive me to training at 5 a.m. and after work.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor thing. When I think about it now, I don't know how they did it.
It really is one of the worst things to choose for that sort of stuff. People say, yeah, five-a-side football is hard. Yeah, it is. But the kid can sort of go themselves. Swimming, so, and you have to travel. There's so much travel involved in it.
Yeah, that's it. All over the country and as well as Europe. Yeah.
People go accessibility to sports and they go, oh, swimming, just buy a pair of trunks, your kid can do swimming. But if they get good at it, like you did, all of a sudden it becomes crazy. But anyway, so.
Yeah, it literally is. Yeah, it literally was the family's life pretty much. I mean, my poor brother, he did swim, but then he got dragged, you know, all over the country as well until he was old enough to not want to anymore. But yeah, so I swam for Wales a few times internationally, and then I went to university, sort of stopped swimming and took up rowing, and then rowed for about 7 years, I think. So I made the GB team, went to the World Championships and Europeans. So that was a great time, actually, and I got K to row as well during those days. So that was it was a brilliant time. But
that must have been surreal, the first sort of time you started getting paid to do the thing you love.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I think you have to teach yourself to think, God, I'm being paid to do this.
Is that the first time it started to grow in your mind that this could potentially be a career?
Yeah, definitely. I think going back to when I was a kid, I dreamt of going to the Olympics. That kind of been my childhood dream, and probably my goal then, as I got older and got into sport and became quite good at it, I think that was kind of my sort of lifelong goal to go to the Olympics. So unfortunately I didn't make the Olympics, due to a bit of injury, I think, and so that was a tough one, actually. It probably still always will be a tough one for me, not quite making it to the Olympics. I think for any athlete, I think that's probably the ultimate goal, isn't it, to compete in the Olympics.
Yeah, so. Absolutely, but I also think it's a very, we've sort of referred to it in the marathon analogy, that the 4-year windows in which that sphere operates, and people, we aspire to Olympians because of their physical characteristics, but it's the mental side of it, preparing yourself for something for 4 years and then to miss out on milliseconds or, you know, small illnesses that only happen in the last week. It can be very mentally torturous as well, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Your kind of, your whole life is centered around a 4-year cycle, basically, especially when I was rowing, because, you know, the a massively successful Olympic sport for Great Britain. So everything was centered around that ultimate goal, which is the Olympics. So when you're in the GB team, so, you know, in year one, you might be in the GB team competing for Britain in the World Champs or the World Cup, but you didn't obviously know that you were going to make it to the Olympics. You were just in that squad, but everything was centered around basically the main goal, which was Olympics in 4 years' time. So, yeah, it was a long slog and it's difficult, but I think because you were so involved in it, you know, mentally, you kind of, that you just had that drive to just continue
sort of
going.
You live in that small, sort of narrow window of train, eat, sleep, repeat, condition,
yeah,
stretch.
Exactly,
and that's
that.
It, and repeat and repeat and repeat.
Yeah, that's it. It's basically a lifestyle. You know, if you want, you've got to just live your life, you know, like for that one goal, I suppose, pretty much. So, yeah.
And then you moved into, because the rowing sort of took a back step from there, but lo and behold, the natural athlete came through again by the sounds of it.
Yeah, that's it. So I forgot to mention as well, I did a sport called surf lifesaving sort of during my teenage years as well. A lot of people don't know what surf lifesaving is, but it's huge in Australia and New Zealand. And it's basically, if you think about Baywatch, it's a little bit like Baywatch without the red swimming costumes and the boom.
Is that how they pitch it? Is that on the prospectus?
Yeah.
It's a bit like Baywatch, basically.
It's lots of competitions in the sea and on the beach, and then in the pool, in the swimming pool as well. So I did that for years because I lived obviously, I'm from Wales originally, so I lived by the coast and was always in the sea. So it's really big on South Wales coast and in Cornwall and Devon as well. So I actually competed for Great Britain in that as well for quite a few years and went to have won a couple of world championships.
Jesus.
As well.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah. But again, because that wasn't an Olympic sport, because it's quite a small sport really in the grand scheme of things. That's when I moved into rowing, and obviously, but I got injured when I was a rower, hit my back sort of in the year before Beijing Olympics.
How did you do that?
And so I think it was just, just the years and years of rowing, and maybe a previous injury in swimming that I didn't know about. So I had some issue with my lower back, and it'd never been a problem when I was a swimmer, but obviously rowing has the, you know,
yeah,
really big strain on the lower back.
Yeah. That rear posture just takes a smashing, doesn't it?
That's it. And sort of the continuous movement, yeah. So I kind of just, probably I was a little bit naive, and because I was quite new to sport really. And I think I just kept, you know, training on sort of niggles that then became, you know, big issues to the point where I had to retire. So, it was a pretty awful time.
I did that on a far more stupid scale and a far less structured scale, where I had niggles and niggles and niggles, and just decided instead to take lots of performance enhancing drugs and then get blooming disc issues and tear my pec off and all sorts of terrible stuff. And there was, I'm sure, a big cocktail of mental illness going on there as well. But I can hear you with the setbacks. But it sounds like you kept on going, because this may not be the biggest thing that some people know your professional sporting career as either.
Yeah, so then I then moved on. So I probably had about a year or so out of doing anything. I just took up coaching, actually. So I started coaching rowing, I think, as just kind of stay connected with the sport. Also, I was trying to, you know, get my back into a good place where I could just, you know, function from day to day, because I was pretty bad. And then decided to take up rugby, which people think is crazy if I've had a back injury. But I think it was quite different. I suppose it's not the same movement over and over. It's quite different. So I never really had a back problem once I started playing rugby. So I only really took it up because I wanted something to do competitively, because I was going to the gym, but I just found that quite boring, you know, just trying to keep myself in shape. So I thought I'd take up rugby. A lot of my friends played it just to do something competitive and probably for the social aspect as well, and be involved in a team again, because I really missed that, I think, being involved in that sporting environment and that team environment. I took it up and then kind of ended up falling back into international sport, basically, after 3 years of sort of playing beer rugby, as I call it. I got onto a sort of talent identification scheme with the Welsh rugby team, and ended up being selected, and then I was back sort of on the international sports scene again after a good few years, and played rugby for Wales then for a few years. So I did 3 Six Nations and a World Cup.
Jesus.
So it was
slip that in the back there. I just 3 Six Nations and a World Cup. You know, you're raising the physical bar quite high now for the rest of the members of the team. How is this going to help us unfold the whole journey that the Antarctic Fire Angels are heading on? So lay us out the actual challenge. Where are we heading and what are we doing?
Right. Okay. So we're obviously going to Antarctica, which is the South Pole, the bottom of the world.
Yeah.
And there's no polar bears there, so So just to
I think that's the common misconception. I don't know which live in which place. I think I've got this image of Father Christmas, penguins, and polar bears all being in the same like 10 square meter area, and that just shows my geographical ridiculousness. Yeah. I'm sure.
All being in the same nativity.
Yeah.
No, there's penguins in Antarctica, and the polar bears are at the top of the world.
Ah, so they're the smart ones. You're going down to the cold bit.
Yeah, we're going down the coldest bit, yeah. So it's 1,900 kilometres. It's a full traverse.
1,900 kilometres.
It's not the same route that the Ice Maidens did.
No, not the easy one.
No. we wanted to be different,
of
you know,
course,
as usual.
Course.
And we wanted to push it a little bit further, as usual. So we start at a place called Berkner Island, which is at the top. We fly into Punta Arenas. We spend a bit of time there refining our equipment, like cutting labels out of clothes and sawing toothbrushes in half. And things just to save weight. That is just purely a weight issue. Yeah.
Really? Is it that specific?
Yeah. Crikey. Yeah. It's when do you think how many labels you've got in all your kit?
I never even thought
about
that. Yeah. 1,900 kilometres. Yeah. It's going to make the difference.
Yeah. And as I said, toothbrushes in half and things like that. So you're really refining your kit.
Where did you have some of that suggestions from? Who gave you that sort of advice? Because that's real thinking. There's some real thinking going on.
Well, anybody who's ever done a traverse and they've had to pull all their own stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a few people that have been to the South Pole. I mean, there's people that you know, sort of, I'm going to say in a more tourist capacity, like they get paid and they pay somebody and somebody guides them across certain things, you know, on shorter passages. And, they're included. Anybody who's had to pull all their own stuff, they soon realise that, you're going to have to refine our kit here. But it's not just that. You're actually making sure you're not taking any foreign species onto the continent as well, and making sure that nobody's ill. So if anybody's sickening for anything or anything like that, obviously, if you're sickening for something, it's going to be like 100 times worse on the continent, where you're going to have to wait quite a long time to get rescued.
You don't just pull into the nearest lay-by and wait.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no roadside assistance at the store. We eventually fly on to Union Glacier, which is like the airport there, and then that's quite a big plane. And then we offload everything onto a smaller plane, and then we leapfrog up to a place called Berkner Island, which is at the top of the pole, and then we ski across to the South Pole, and then we spend a few hours there having a small resupply. And then we hang a right and we go up onto the Titan Dome, which is higher than the pole itself. It's probably one of the most inhospitable places.
These are amazing names. It's like somebody from Lord of the Rings.
I know,
names. They're great, aren't they?
Titan Dome. It's good, isn't it? Even sounds intimidating. Yeah. and then we ski off the dome and we get to a glacier called the Axel Heiberg Glacier. And which is where all our crevasse rescuer really come in handy, obviously. Hopefully nobody's going to fall down anything, because that's where all our training kicks in.
I was about to say, have you had to do a lot of that sort of stuff as well? Because then again, we're not just getting into the physical aspects. You need to also be a self-rescue crew capable of worst case scenario.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is why it's taking so long. Don't get me wrong, I mean, we could have paid a lot of money for somebody to take us, you know, a long way, and they would have done everything for us, but that's not the point, you know, what's the point in that? And if you're going to do it like we're doing it, then do it and throw yourself into it completely. So, once we've done the glacier, we ski down onto the Ross Ice Shelf, and that's where we get picked up. So, we've also had a sort of a semi-invite to go to the McMurdo research station, where there's a full-time fire station there as
no
well.
No way.
Yeah.
A fire station in Antarctic. That is just something out of a fairy tale.
Yeah. Well, McMurdo research base is basically, it's like a village, like a whole movable village, because obviously the whole continent moves around and shifts and crevasses open up left, right and centre. the whole place is like on a floating thing, and they can like move it around if they anticipate things happening. And of course, because of that, obviously you need, you know, quite a lot of expertise there. And one of them is a fire station. So yeah, so I think there's all the will and the heart to get there, but it's like another airplane journey and another probably like 50, 60 grand to get there. Don't get me wrong. If somebody said, look, I will pay you 60 grand to get onto that station and exchange some fire service t-shirts, you know, we're like for memorabilia.
Absolutely, yeah. If anybody, we'll do it, you know? You'll be willing to add a few labels to your jacket if any of our budding entrepreneurs are listening and they say they support the fire service and they support everything else. Well, let's put our pony in our pocket, shall we? And let's go for it.
Yeah,
that would be
really, really right.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And in all seriousness, it is a wonderful opportunity for businesses and companies and people that want to support and appreciate what all emergency services, NHS, military, fire service have done over the past 100 years, let alone this very challenging past 12 months. But so hopefully that may or may not happen, but nonetheless, it sounds like a pretty epic trip all in all.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things, you know, people do an Ironman and then they get a tattoo.
Yeah.
On their calves, that's the classic. And it's definitely one of those defining moments in your life when you think, do you know what? I think I might get a tattoo of this. I don't know what.
100%. I say that every week. I'm covered. Yeah. I'm covered in stupid tattoos. Some people don't like them. I've got little things on my thumbs that say like "Be the Difference" and all this sort of jazz. And people see them and they're like, "Ugh, really?" But I'm like, it means something to me. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I know it's so tongue in cheek for so many people, but it matters to me, and that's all it is. That's what tattoos should be. I look forward to it. Do you think all the team will be up for it? Is there anybody who'd be like, "Oh god, I'm not really a tattoo kind of person"?
I don't know. Actually, I think most of us have got something. I've got two on my arms. You've got some, haven't you?
I've got a couple,
Nikita.
Yeah.
Nikita is
the rugby players
all over
her
arms and her back.
Yeah.
I don't know about Alison, actually, whether she's got a tattoo or not, or whether she'd want one. Maybe we'd have to, like, ply her with some alcohol and convince her to get...
That good old leadership skill, I'm just plying them with some alcohol.
Yeah.
They don't teach that one on IFEs, guys.
Yeah. Come here, area manager. This is good for you.
Yeah. We'll have tattoos of the Antarctic map on our butts or something.
Love it.
Yeah.
George, that kind of play. I was reading your bio thing, and you've almost, I'm assuming you wrote this yourself. It was described as unpredictable, which I think we can agree on so far. Cantankerous, which is a lovely, lovely word you don't hear very much lately, perhaps because of how people take it, but protective. And they're three really, really crucial words. Can you speak around what they mean to you and how you feel that role is going to help the team? Because you've got some big strengths that are going to be required in this.
Yeah, well, I think the unpredictability just comes from the randomness of doing stuff like this.
Mm.
I think that's where the idea came from, is the unpredictable nature of me, which, without a shadow of a doubt. And it's weird though, because I'm quite routine-y.
Okay.
I wouldn't say I'm OCD routine, but I do have. I stand for each day, and if that plan doesn't go ahead, I'm a bit kind of, oh, right, okay, which order should I do it in now? I also like pushing myself to be pushed out of my routine as well. So I suppose that's the unpredictability of my personality. And cantankerous, well, put it this way, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Okay.
And my mother was cantankerous, yeah. But we're very similar in our temperaments and personalities. So, cantankerous, I think, it's taken both two ways, really, to be a negative or a positive. But I think if it's not a bad thing, but I'm quite good at getting my own way.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm quite good at getting my own way. And I think that's what the cantankerous.
I think more people should be that way, though. There should be more that way. Some people hear the words like selfish and they think like, oh god, somebody's selfish. I'm like, no, but you need to look after yourself first and foremost. Only then can you be in a position of strength to help everybody else. I mean, you lot have got to make yourselves very fit and strong to be able to do this thing, to empower the rest of the community, the rest of the fire service. You've got to be, I mean, in your personal life as well, you're going to have to be quite selfish in all the run up to this to make sure you are in tip-top condition. But also when you set around, you know, getting your way, there's nothing wrong with wanting to get your way. I think far too many people, a result of, you know, we're getting sort of mental health, is that they feel a little bit afraid to ask, not just demand, but ask for the things that they want and push themselves and have a bit of determination and realize that if they get a no, maybe it doesn't mean no forever. It might just mean no right now. Do you know what I mean? So cantankerous, like I say, I think we some people do vilify it, but I hear that and I hear passion, I hear determination, I hear relentlessness. And those things for me, as somebody who's certainly been called various things, one of many will be cantankerous, is I think it is a compliment to somebody such as yourself who has got a lot of drive.
Oh, thank you. I don't sit on the fence with many things, put it that way. So I'm either one thing or the other. And I like to give people an answer. You know,
there's nothing worse than not knowing where you stand with somebody. It's quite scary and unnerving, and you know, just perpetuates mental health again if you don't know where you stand with somebody, whether that be in a personal relationship or a professional relationship.
And the protective element, well, it's just I wouldn't say I have sound bad again. I wouldn't say I have that many friends or that many close friends. But the you know, it's like less than 10 people came to my 40th, and they were the closest people in my life. And, you know, and I'm insanely protective over people. And I'll bend over backwards to go out of my way to protect people. And this is what the team is to me as well. So I'm very, very protective over it. So it doesn't matter what happens or if anybody's doing anything. So I'll be the person to sort of take it at face value, evaluate it and say, look, okay, does this need attention? Does this need sort of ongoing or anything like that, you know? And that's from anything that's physical or anything that's more like that. So, yeah, and that's where the protective element comes from it as well. So I'm quite ferocious with that.
I totally hear you with that. I've been told many times in the past that I'm very hard to be friends with because I don't do like the little social aspects of, you know, the smaller bits. But you can ring me at 1 a.m. and that's absolutely fine. I will not be upset or angry or anything like that. And I'll be there and I'll go and help you out. But I struggle with mediocrity. Do you know what I mean? It leaves a weird feeling in my mouth and I'm like, bleh. Do you know what I mean? I want to talk about goals. I want to talk about personal development. I want to talk about your best self and all that sort of stuff. And it can be bloody exhausting. I feel for my wife. Do you know what I mean? When it comes to the day, hey, baby, what was the win for today? How's this? She's, oh, Jesus Christ. You know, she's not. She's really, really great. I wanted to get into some of the training aspects because, Bet, obviously, again, Bet, you're really familiar with lots of different training and stuff. But how do you even train for something like this? Because you're going to have to be hitting something like 27K a day and you're pulling, I think it's something crazy like 85 kilos, which is 13, 14 stone, something crazy like that.
Yeah, at least 85 kilos. I think it'll probably be based on our body weight. So I'll be the heaviest person in the team. So I will probably be pulling the heaviest pulls. but basically our main kind of, or bread and butter of training is tire pulling. So obviously we don't have any snow over here, and so we pull two tires joined together, attached to a harness, and we basically drag those around the countryside looking like absolute crazy people for hours on end. So so at the moment we're kind of well, it's been quite difficult obviously over lockdown and things. We're not been able to, you know, go. We usually go out in sort of small groups, so I've been going out quite a lot with Nikita and Nikki. The three of us will meet up sort of in a nice park or something, and we all drag our tires around for around 4 or 5 hours just continuously walking around trying to see breaks. And sort of build that up basically, but obviously at the moment it's quite difficult, so you can't go far from your home and we can't meet up, etc. But that is basically what we will be doing a lot of for the next 2-3 years.
How do you deal with the endurance aspect of that? Because some people are familiar with marathons, 4, 5, 3 hours, whatever. Are you going to be able to use, like, I don't know, can you take music with you? Are you going to be able to listen to audiobooks? Because I'm sure, even from this brief conversation, you're both very interesting, but I'm not sure after 1900 kilometers you're going to be quite as interesting. You may know everything about each other by then. How are you going to tick the time over? I mean, even in these 4 or 5 hour marches, do you audiobook? Do you podcast? Do you just sit and contemplate? Do you allow yourself to think about how do you do it?
So I mean when we're out as a group, the three of us could talk, so we just chat away, to be quite honest. But when I've been going out on my own, I quite often take some music or
listen to a podcast or something. But I think when we're out on the ice, we'll be mainly single file actually. So we'll just be in like a long line, the five of us. So, and you know, with the wind and everything, and you know, the distance between us, we're not going to be able to hear each other anyway.
That's
so
what I mean. It's going
to
be you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think we're hoping to take, you know, music and have a very, very long playlist and probably some podcasts. But I think a lot of our training before we go as well is going to be being, you know, being isolated, being going out on our own, probably not having any music.
It'll need to be, yeah.
That's it. And just having to deal. That's it. Dealing with the sort of the monotony of doing the same thing for hours and hours. And also, you know, the landscape will be, you know, however beautiful, it's going to be the same thing every day.
Absolutely.
You know, same white landscape every day. So just being, you know, so when we go out walking, even though we could go to some lovely, lovely places, just doing the same route over and over again for hours as well. So,
does any of that speak back to your time as a swimmer? Because I've spent time with a lot of swimmers in the past, and I say, I'll do hours and hours in the gym. Yeah, fair enough. Swimming. Some of the bloody warm-ups I've seen you guys do were just ridiculous. I don't think they're bloody unnecessary. But you can't listen to anything. So you're in the pool and you're just on your own in utter silence, really. Mm. So, I mean, you've kind of already got a grounding in that. Have any of the other team members really, do you think, have they really contemplated this? And have you thought about, you know, I know you're all leaders in your own independent way, but I don't know whether or not you'll be sort of got any advice for the rest of the team. You may perhaps already discussed it, how to deal with that.
Yeah, I think like for instance, George, I know she's done some kind of expedition type stuff, climbing mountains and stuff. And I think she's kind of probably the most experienced in terms of isolation and going off on your own and things and the boredom. Whereas the others, maybe Alison, because she's done quite a lot of endurance running as well, so she's probably got more of an idea. But maybe Nikita and Nikki, I'm not so sure. They probably then maybe the least experienced in that area. So I think, you know, in terms of, I suppose, as we go through the months now leading up to it, I think there will be a bit more of me saying you need to go and, you know, pull ties on your own, or you need to go for a long walk on your own. You need to, you know, go on the cross trainer and stare at the white wall in the gym for a couple of hours.
Isn't it? It's nothing to do with, oh, you're not fit enough, you're not good enough. It's just a different mindset. You just need to be able to slip into that gear and be able to stay in that gear for a very, very long time. Because you'll know from all of your training, most training, we get so interested, oh, it needs to be sexy, it needs to be this, it needs to be... Most of it's boring as hell. It is. It's just, unless you enjoy the process, you know, the journey is all of it. You know what I mean? The 99.9%, the end bit where you lot finish, and as I know you will, that's going to be such a small part of the journey. You need to fall in love with the process ultimately.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, the process we're in at the moment, like just to actually get to Antarctica, I think is a challenge in itself. You know,
gotcha.
I think that might be, you know, more, the bigger challenge is that, you know, to raise the money, to do all the training, to keep mentally on the ball, I think. Leading up to actually being on the ice, I think is probably almost the bigger challenge than actually doing the main challenge.
I mean, having to give up your free time and talk to boring people like me is just an endurance in itself. You know, just to get the word out there is hard stuff. I wanted to ask you about empowering each other, because George, a big part of this, and I know what you're trying to get out there, is, you know, reducing that stigma, but also acknowledging and empowering each other and inspiring each other. What sort of people have inspired you in the past? If you saw first, George, and why?
I'll sort of address the serious topic first. Look, the sort of person that inspires me is anybody. I mean, I could bump into somebody today, and they'll inspire me because they've told me a story that you know that they are, you know, Janet from next door, but they're going out and, you know, that they're doing couch to 5K. You know what I mean? But they've never done that before. And that's like, that gives me goosebumps, little stories like that. And the fact that they want to tell you, you know, means loads. So it's literally anybody that wants to go and do something extraordinary. And that extraordinary could be, it doesn't have to be what we're doing. It could be anything. I mean, they may have been self-isolating for the last 10 months. You know, got up and not been able
kids.
To leave the house because, absolutely. But Yeah, and but it's the first time they've got out in months, and you know they probably you know don't feel as fit or anything like that. They don't know how to be in the countryside and things. But you know what, they're getting out there and they're exploring, and you know, albeit they might leave you know a gate open or you know or things like that. Do you know what I mean? But that's just a learning. That's a learning curve, you know.
Good intention.
Yeah. It's all good intention. So yeah, so it's anybody that sort of gets up and gets out there. And does something for themselves and goes out and gets it. Historically speaking, I'm 47 in March, so you can imagine in a young teenager or you know somebody under 10, I didn't have many role models growing up. Really, it was only really the people that were on television, you know, because women just didn't have that kind of access to go and do, you know, amazing stuff. So, I mean, I was left with Wonder Woman and Margaret Thatcher. So, and
the Iron Lady, though, I didn't follow. She's got some great stuff. I've got a few quotes from her around my house.
Yeah. Well, you know, regardless of whether you followed her politics or not, I was too young for any of that. Do you know what I mean? And regardless if you followed the politics or not, she was a blooming formidable woman stood up for women and women doing just getting up there and getting a voice and getting a voice heard out there, you know. And she was the start of women in politics, really. And that's a lot to do with my age. You know, you just see this powerful person. You don't understand what they're saying, but you just, they're standing up there and they're saying something,
and everybody's listening, you know. I heard somebody refer to her the other day, and this might sound really bad, so I might have to edit this out afterwards, but they called her a barbed wire babe. And I said, what the hell is a barbed wire babe?
Barbed wire babe.
Yeah,
that's Pammy, isn't it? It's a fair.
Yeah, that's Pamela Anderson.
I'd never heard of it before. And they were saying, they say in the military, they said at some point in time, you need to accept that you might have to lay across barbed wire for other people to get across it. And they said she was the sort of person, she was willing to do that. She laid across the barbed wire so that other women could step over and could try and, you know, go on and fight the battle and fight the war and fight for that equality. And I went, oh yeah, I'm not sure about the term babe, barbed wire babe, but I was like, I get where it comes from. We could maybe think of a better way of saying it, but I thought, so I really admire her.
Yeah. It's, again, you know, too young for her politics. And I remember my parents talking about it, but I never understood any of it. You know what I mean? But looking back on documentaries that have been been done on her now, and, you know, looking at her life and everything. And it's the same as Hillary Clinton as well. Again, lover or hater, I'm indifferent. I don't know anything about the American side of politics. Yeah. But what she went through, and, you know, all the last presidential race and everything that she had to basically suck up and absorb was just phenomenal. And how you do that as a human being alone, let alone a minority in such a strong male dominated arena, you know? So
that's huge.
And of course there's Wonder Woman, so
of course, the number one obvious tick that box.
Yeah.
Hit us, Bex. What have we got? Who are your not quote unquote idols, but who would you inspire, or who do you aspire? Sorry.
I mean, you know, in terms of what George is talking about, I think, and any woman really can inspire another woman. I think, with a small or a big story. But I think, growing up, I had a hero, and that was Sharon Davis. Because obviously, I was a swimmer back in the day, in my early years, and Sharon Davis was a huge kind of sporting celebrity. Back when I was young, and she's still, you know, she's still quite active kind of on Twitter and you know, in the media eye as well at the moment. And so I always wanted to aspire to be like her. I think she, you know, she basically trained really hard. She, you know, something was her life, you know, like mine ended up being. She was very successful, and then she also went on to, you know, become become a broadcaster in swimming and in sport. And I just, you know, love watching her on the TV, especially when she's covering the Olympics and things like that. I think she's, you know, she was an ordinary woman who got into swimming and then, you know, ended up doing all these extraordinary things, basically. And you know, she's just a woman like the rest of us. And but you know, she massively inspired me as a kid, and probably still does now. I've still not yet got to meet her, so I'm hoping that one day I may may get the opportunity.
She will be so lucky after she sees the victories that you guys have. You know, she'll have to be emailing in to Antarctic Angels to see if she can get on and have a chat. No, but I totally hear you, you know, in terms of what they've done after their successes as well, because being able to help other people, celebrate other people, acknowledge other people, and that's kind of, I mean, the whole point of the podcast, to be honest with you, is some people find it so hard to tell their own stories. And even in this world of social media, it's so hard for you lot, because it's like, there's something about you don't want to bang on about yourself all the time, because it's like, I'm not really that sort of person. But we forget that the gift it gives other people in that small drop of inspiration, of optimism, to go on and do their thing. And I love it, you know, whether it's people inside or outside the emergency services. You know, we have people on the podcast, not even in the emergency services, just because not all heroes wear capes. Do you know what I mean? And as you rightly referred to, George, sometimes it's the person who holds down three jobs and still finds 10 minutes in the evening to read a book with their kid. Do you know what I mean? That's a heroic act. And we should never diminish that. I wanted to close up with a couple of small bonus questions, which I know you girls will probably roll your eyes at, but we'll have a see how we go. So, George, hit us with, if you could have that massive billboard in the sky, and you've got that one message to share with the world that you think they desperately need to hear right now, what would it be?
The message would be, live your life like you're going to write a book about it.
Love that. Like you're going to write a book about it. I always say to people, imagine there's a documentary going on right now, as in the whole film crew is following you around. What example would you want to be living? What example would you want to be giving your children and stuff like that? Absolutely love that one. Mm. Pressure's on, Bex.
Oh, God. I think mine would be, don't forget to celebrate the small wins. Definitely for me, and it's probably for a lot of athletes, where, you know, you're always looking for the next big thing. So you might, you know, and you forget about the little things you might have achieved along the way, because you're always trying to get that next big thing or work towards that big goal, and you forget about all the other stuff that you may have achieved along the way. So,
100%.
And then suddenly it's all gone. You know, you're injured or you're retired, and it's suddenly all gone.
Because the person you are right now is the person that once upon a time you aspired to be, having achieved all the things that you've achieved. And also, we're dopamine driven animals. We want those little wins. Mm. It's what keeps us going. And if we don't acknowledge them, then it's going to be hard to keep rolling on and going through the challenges. We're obviously going through a massive challenge globally right now, and I just wanted to close out for people that, you know, will hear this in 30 years, if it's ever still around, that it'd be hard for people to remember what we're going through. You know, when people speak about something 30, 40 years ago and you're like, oh yeah, whatever, it wasn't really that bad. If you had a message to give to the future society, George, what would it be to give them two or three sentences about where we are now, what it was like, and sort of things that people should really appreciate that perhaps you take for granted?
It might be 2021, and the world is dominated by social media and imagery and things like that. Don't sit on your hands. Be the person to make that difference. Be the person to stand up for injustice, most definitely. And be the person that you needed when you were growing up.
I absolutely love that one. I'm going to do something really sad now. Can you see that on your screen? Can you see what that says?
Be the difference. Yeah.
I'm just going to tattoo it on the back of my other thumb, because I always do it to people. When people say something, I'll just give them the thumbs up, and on the back of it, it says be the difference. And they're like, oh yeah, all right, Pete, fair enough, whatever. I'm like, seriously, dude, come on. You want somebody to be more empathetic, or, you know, want me to be a better listener, then you be a better listener. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what's the best way for guys and girls to have felt that inspiration to reach out and give to this incredible cause? Bex, what's the best place for people to get in contact?
So we've got a website, which is www.antarcticfireangels.co.uk. So all the information about us, about the expedition, about how you can donate, how you can purchase sponsorship packages, that's another way of donating towards us, and all our media channels and everything is all on the website. We're also on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook as well. So if you type in Antarctic Fire Angels, you will find us on all three of those. And we have a GoFundMe page, where you can donate to us. 100%.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you giving up your time. I apologize if it's taken a bit too long. Is there any closing bits you think we've missed that we need to tie in there?
No, I don't think so. And no, it's been really, really good. I've really enjoyed it, actually. Yeah. So it's you said at the beginning that we'll probably do this all the time. This is my first podcast.
Oh. Hopefully it left a good feeling for
personally,
you.
Personally. Really good.
My hope is that people would take away from these that, you know, there's some incredible people in the emergency services. We've had such a rough time in the past 20 years of strikes and all this sort of rubbish that, you know, there's still some serial optimists out there, and you lot are just a perfect example of that. So any opportunity we can take to lift each other up, and certainly lift you lot up, and show that there's still lots of good stuff to be fighting for. So thank you so much for coming on, and
thank you.
Send love to the family. Thank you. The rest of the team, and we'll see you soon.
You too. You too. Take care. Thanks.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.
Hey folks, that's another one wrapped up. Such an awesome chat with George and Bex. They're hilarious. I absolutely loved it. I love their openness as well, you know, talking about some of the mental health challenges that the team had been through, some of the training approaches, you know, dragging tires around fields for 5 hours at a time. Doesn't sound like a lot of fun to people, I know, but these are the things we do in the darkness. You know, I've said on other podcasts that it's that whole mindset that what you practice in private, you get recognized and rewarded for in public. And this team is just out there, you know, every single weekend, beg, borrow and steal that time away from their loved ones and their jobs, and, you know, trying to carve that training time out there. And this isn't even including all the other training. You know, we spoke about the crevasse rescue training in this podcast and all sorts. This really is an incredibly heroic attempt that the team are going to look to overcome. If you want to sponsor them, we will put the notes in the show notes that you'll see at the bottom of this. When you scroll down, it will probably say show more. Have a look in there. Head over to Antarctic Fire Angels. It's an awesome cause. It's a once in a lifetime thing, guys. They're not asking for money every single year. So get in there, give big, give small. Give them support, give them optimism, share the podcast, send it to somebody that you think is going to be inspired by their journey. And we thank you so much for coming back and giving the podcast your time to share another incredible story of some really inspiring people that are getting out there and trying to make a difference for the stigmas of women's mental health, and also trying to create that equality across all of the emergency services. Thank you so much for coming back to the Firefighters Podcast, and I will see you soon.